Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 17 of the Naturally Nourished podcast. Carly's here with me, of course. And today we're going to be doing a loose format. We just got back from a conference, an advanced medical practice conference through the Institute of Functional Medicine. The IFM, as they're known, is the gold standard in functional integrative medicine and has been founded by some really big pioneers in the functional medicine movement. Functional medicine is a newer practice. The term was coined by Dr. Jeff Bland, and it is really the turnkey in where medicine, I believe, is going or needs to be going. And as we've discussed, it looks at the underlying causes of chronic condition versus treating the symptoms. So functional medicine is trying to understand always what are the antecedents or the predisposing elements, what are the triggering events, and then what are the systems of the body that are greatest influenced by these events? And then how does that drive dysfunction in the body? And at what earliest place can we make an intervention to create whole body health care? So I went to two modules. I went to advanced cardiometabolic, and I also went to immune. And I was in Atlanta for 7 days, and then Carly and Lindsay, my other two dietitians on staff, came out for the second half and met me for the immune module. So I want to hear a little bit from Carly on her experience, and then I'll share some of my highlights, and then we're going to go into a Q&A the rest of the episode today. I think we have 5 or 6 really great questions from all you listeners. Thank you for submitting them. Make sure you do so on Ask Allie, which is through our podcast landing page on our website. And we're so happy to be able to directly address these. But first, Carly, tell me about how the experience was. Were you delightfully overwhelmed? Was it old information, new information? What was your take?
I think delightfully overwhelmed says it all. It was everything that I hoped it would be. It was so inspiring, so cool. My brain exploded with information, but it really helped refocus a lot of things. And I still have a lot of digestion to do of the information, kind of weeding through it and extracting things to put into practice, because I think that's a whole nother step, you know, learning and understanding, but translating that so you can use it every day is something else that's going to take some time, but so powerful. And these people are so inspiring. I knew I just wanted to like walk up to some of these speakers and Velcro
Sponge.
Myself and just, and just stay. Cause yeah. I just, everything that they said was so brilliant and made so much sense. And again, inspiring and would instill hope in a lot of people dealing from chronic illness.
Absolutely.
So definitely I would love to go back. I wish I could go to all of them, but I don't know how you did 2 in a row because my head hurt from all the information from just one.
Yeah. I think, you know, with the having a functional medicine in my educational background, it's a lot of revisiting, but always it always delves a step deeper. And what I really love about their advanced training is that it's always taking into account more up-to-date research studies. So always more clinical pearls, always more application. And that's why I think it kind of keeps everyone who's a member there hungry for more. The way that I'm going about it is there is a foundational course. It's the AFMCP, Applying Functional Medicine in Clinical Practice. And I took that last year. And you have to take the foundational course and then 6 advanced practice modules to sit for a medical board examination to be licensed by the IFM. as a functional medicine practitioner. So I am a functional medicine practitioner, but I don't hold a license through this avenue. And so I'm going to be pursuing that and probably doing about 2 modules a year and continuing to use those in my practice. And then I'll sit for that board exam. And also within that, you submit case studies, patient interventions and outcomes. And it'll be another feather to add to the hat, per se, but definitely always a great opportunity for advanced education.
All while she's running a practice and pregnant with a baby. So that's a little piece into Allie's world.
Delightfully overwhelmed is my mantra.
Oh, yes.
So how about any kind of like tangible take homes, Carly? What were some of the big kind of ahas, or how about any reaffirmation of things that I've taught you or that you're doing in clinical practice that you felt more confident with, or kind of what were the big...
I think one of the biggest takeaways is they start the module with really intensive biochem that you're like, what is a COX-2 inhibitor? What is an interleukin? What is a cytokine? You're like, oh my gosh, talk about spiderwebs in your head. But what was so cool is that they talk about all these complicated mechanisms in which pharmaceutical drugs block certain receptors, or they interface certain way and you know, cause messengers, hormonal, I don't know. I can't even spit it out. It's so complicated, these processes in the body, right? And medications target certain areas of these genes.
And a single one.
Right. And then they'll go to talk about all these medications. And I think that can be intimidating coming from, an RD track where I'm not familiar with a lot of medications in general. So I'm constantly looking up what is the mechanism of action? How does this work? What is the dosage? But what they really drove home was the medicinal properties of food have just of a powerful reaction in the body, if not more so than mm-hmm. some of these medications, and it's food. Yeah. And so that's a very simple way of saying a lot of the things we learned, but I loved being re-energized and I'm not so intimidated anymore by all the medications out there and what they're doing. I can picture it a little bit better.
I think one of the big unfortunate misunderstandings is, well, within the immune module, we of course talked a lot about inflammation. So as Carly's talking, a lot of those words that are flying over your head, and it's absolutely fine. Things like COX-1 and COX-2 and interleukins and prostaglandins, these are all inflammatory immune modulated chemical mediators. So these are all chemicals of inflammation. And so certain drugs like Celebrex or aspirin or NSAIDs block particular single mechanisms, like they will be a COX-2 inhibitor or a prostaglandin inhibitor. And the beautiful thing is that something like curcuminoids and turmeric will block the scope of all of these compounds, not just a single inhibitor. They will inhibit all of the inflammatory mediators. And then the even cooler part, as if that wasn't cool enough, is that then they can have favorable influence on insulin response. And then they can have favorable influence on our dopamine levels. And then they can have favorable influence, as a natural antidepressant, as a natural anti-inflammatory, as a natural metabolic stimulator. And so there is this whole body, whole person health approach where the side effects, I'm using air quotes, side effects are favorable versus harmful. And I think that that's really where the mantra of our practice and the foundation of which we treat our patients, the food as medicine, comes alive and in a very inspiring way. So it was very, very, very cool.
Absolutely. It's kind of describes if you look up, green tea, looking for it associated with a certain scientific research paper, there are endless. You could never, ever get through that many. Mm-hmm. And that's what Allie was describing, is one food, one tea leaf can have so many different benefits.
Yes.
And it's really just encouraging. That was my biggest takeaway. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we use fish oil regularly. We have a private label fish oil called BioAvail that we love. But really giving so much credit to the anti-inflammatory effects of a potent dose of that was re-inspiring. You go through phases and you're focusing on different nutrients, but fish oil kind of came through as this huge hero throughout the whole program.
Yeah, most definitely, I would say.
So not new, reinforcing, like you said, what you've taught me, but just a little bit deeper knowledge, a little deeper understanding, a little bit more encouragement to keep using it.
Mm-hmm. And then I think on the my big take homes on the immune side. Well, cardiometabolic was great. I have so much fun research to share with you guys on up to date trends in lipid research, and also in statin drugs and alternatives and roles to treat blood clots and stroke and all that jazz. And I think I'll do that as a whole episode. Probably just as much information from the immune module, if not more. But the biggest thing I wanted to hit with the immune module, one of my ahas was I was told by so many rheumatologists and specialists that when you're on a biologic, a certain medication that works as a biological agent in the body, these are things like Humira or Enbrel, that if you were to wean a patient off of a biologic, that they lose the ability to have any effective influence from that drug. So those were drugs that I was able to successfully wean patients on, but I think it like sat on my conscience, or like I felt of all of the pharmaceutical drugs, and me having worked for a physician's practice for years prior to opening my private practice, so I'm pretty familiar with the whole gamut. But the immunosuppressants and the biologics were the classification that I was always the most to kind of tread lightly, per se, but yet the most destructive. Because the immunosuppressants' number one side effect is cancer, because it's shutting down your immune system's ability to fight foreign invaders, and of those foreign invaders are tumor activity in the body. So I left feeling a lot more empowered and capable and able of being able to using things like the specific carbohydrate diet and anti-inflammatory approaches and the already successful mechanisms I'm using, but to help to more aggressively reduce my patient medication load. And I've seen the harmful side effects that medications have had. So many of my patients actually can get resolution of their symptoms from simple medication discontinuation. So that was a really empowering piece. And then the other element I want to touch on is why people in autoimmune protocols, especially when they're using food as medicine, tend to have flares during the beginning of their cleanse. And I think especially we see this a lot with our MRT diet. I don't know if you see this often, but
yes.
You know, MRT diet, or if a patient is weaning off of a steroid, of course. But specifically when we're talking about gut and immune function, as we start to improve the patient's gut, you know, we think of the gut as, you know, we talked about those like finger-like projections that line the GI tract. If someone has leaky gut and they have damage to the villi or the epithelial lining of the gut, there's going to be larger antigens or larger compounds going through their gut barrier into their bloodstream. So their bloodstream is overburdened with inflammatory compounds. And it's overburdened with inflammatory compounds that are responding to the antigens or the food compounds that have leaked through the gut. So as you start to repair their gut barrier, you actually reduce the amount of antigens that are leaking into the bloodstream, or as you, beyond repairing the gut barrier, remove those inflammatory foods. So maybe you go gluten-free, maybe you remove grains and completely, maybe you go specific carbohydrate or follow your MRT diet. You've now reduced those antigens or those compounds that were driving the inflammation, but yet the inflammation army is still there looking for something to attack. And so often as we reduce what was being attacked by managing the diet in a beneficial way, there's a residual like 2-to-week rebound of worse inflammation, because now those chemical mediators are fighting against your own body, not latching on to those antigens from those foods. And it's something that I've seen in practice. I've explained, but not that well. Hopefully I explained it well. I don't know. But I had an aha moment during the conference with that, where I was like, I always tell people, oh, that's the part of, you know, the Herx response, or that's the part of the cleansing process. It gets worse before it gets better. But I like now that I can have this visual and I can kind of draw, like, these are these like linked chains, you know, your inflammatory chemical had something to attack. Now we've removed the thing that was driving the inflammation. We have to now detox those inflammatory chemicals to help your body to mellow out.
The visual definitely helped. I can see exactly what you're talking about in my head.
Yeah. So that was my aha.
And to go along with that too, something, this unsung hero, everyone talks about going gluten-free, but these top medical practitioners in the functional medicine field who are just brilliant going gluten-free is one of their biggest interventions. And it sounds so simple, but it's not to be overlooked.
Right.
You know, not to be taken lightly. Even if you're not having GI symptoms, it doesn't mean it's not affecting your body.
Right.
So I think that's a great place to start if anybody listening is a little overwhelmed and not feeling great. Just try it. And it's not going to be your cure-all for weight loss necessarily, but we're looking to drive inflammation down, and that's where you want to go, maybe.
And I think even more so within that is just flour free in general, you know, of all of the refined carbohydrates, most definitely.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's get into some questions.
Yeah. So this is our first Q&A episode. People have been sending in their questions from all over, and we're excited to finally start addressing them. Let's start with Melody from Houston. Melody, thanks so much for sending this in. You're definitely one of the first ones to send, so we want to make sure yours is answered. Melody says, thanks for giving such awesome resources for us. My question is, what do you think could be the cause of breakouts after workouts? After I work out, Zumba, body pump, etc., my right arm turns red and gets a light rash. It goes away within 20 to 45 minutes, but it seems to get worse. I have a feeling it's an allergy of some kind, but not sure. I'd love to hear your perspective.
Okay, Melody from Houston. So this could be a couple different things. Of course, breakout, when I hear the word breakout, I typically tend to think of more of acne or dermatitis. And it's seeming like this is actually more of a red bumping on the skin, so maybe more of a histamine reaction since it's a rash. But I'll address both because I'll answer in two ways because I think it's maybe two different perspectives and I want to make sure I address it. So if we're talking about a breakout, like having acne, having pimples, having zits, and especially those that create pus, we're looking at helping to support the liver in detox processes. Remember that the skin is the largest organ of the body and that your dermal tissue is a mechanism of detoxification. And during sweat, you're actually working through those tissues and you are going to be excreting compounds that can throw off your oil and pH balance in the skin. So, of course, ensuring that your pH is in check, using a toner that doesn't dry out or is too astringent in the skin would be important. Also looking for topical reactions. A lot of our patients are actually reactive to salicylic acid or salicylates, and that's in a lot of skincare products, and that can, you know, is used as an anti-acne treatment, but that can actually drive more acne. So potentially looking at sensitivity testing. And then supporting your liver in the detox process, and then considering bacteria and yeast dysbiosis. We often also see an imbalance of candidiasis or candida or yeast driving systemic acne. And then we can see hormonal imbalance as the other piece, and that ties back to the liver. So the first thing I would think is supporting the liver. So looking at a product like Amino Detox would be a great option. You can take that's through our online store through Designs for Health. You can take two of those at rise and two at rest. Take that for about 30 days and see if that changes for you, Melody. And then if you're having bloating or any gastric stuff, you might want to look deeper into the gut. And then specifically if you're on birth control, then you might want to look into the estrogen piece. So that would be kind of the three part for a breakout. Now, and the reason is, again, with the workout, because you're working through your sebaceous glands. And so when you're creating that excretion of sweat, that's what's going to influence that pH, and that's going to move that tissue that was more stagnant. And so if there is any imbalance, it's going to create that removal or that output. And that's where we'd want to see what's trying to be removed from the body. Now, if it's a light rash and it's this redness, I would look more into like vasodilation. So often with exercise, I would ask, you know, Melody, is she using anything with arginine in it? Any branched chain amino acid formulas? Anything that increases nitric oxide? There's a lot of pre-workout boosts, you know, that have nitric oxide in a pure form or arginine, and that can create this vasodilation, which basically is going to expand your blood vessels and increase your blood flow. That can help with muscle building, but that can also create imbalance within your vasculature, which could create that redness and that rashing. And then furthermore on that, if it's a rash of like red dots, that would be more of like a keratosis. And the keratosis I would think of as more of an essential fatty acid imbalance. So keratosis would be raised red dots on the arms versus a rash would not typically have like the hardened red dots. The rash might be a little bit puffy or different texture on the skin, but the keratosis, I would look at essential fatty acids, making sure I'm getting enough EPA and DHA in my fish oil, and then adding in some GLA. And then also supporting the body with a vitamin A. Vitamin A would be really important from your foods, like your carotenoid-rich foods, your orange fleshy foods, and cooking those in fats. That helps the barrier of your skin cells, which isn't going to allow that release of fatty acids, and that'll maintain a good structural barrier and a good integrity in the skin.
Sounds good. The only thing I would add is if you want to support your liver, you could also do like 3/4 full of a shot glass of apple cider vinegar in the morning.
Yeah.
Just to cleanse your liver. It's about 2 tablespoons.
Okay.
Yeah. I did it this morning.
So it's a lot.
Like, okay. It's about 2 tablespoons. Yeah. And that's just good liver support too.
Yeah. The apple cider vinegar, especially the Bragg's, which is going to be non-filtered and raw, is going to have probacteria in there. And it also has malic acid. That's going to help to support the liver.
Perfect. I think that hopefully covers enough different outlets for you.
Yeah, on a couple scopes, yeah. Okay. Sorry, Melody.
Question number 2 is from Sarah from Chicago. When is the best time to take a probiotic, and what if I don't react well to it?
I love this question. So first and foremost, the best time to take a probiotic is at bed. I have so many patients that are taking a probiotic at breakfast and or in the morning. And the reason it's best at bed is that you want all of those good bugs to set up camp while you sleep. You don't want to challenge them with different acidity, different pHs, which would be changed by your digestive juices or changed by caffeine or changed by hot liquids, temperature changes. And then you also don't want things like fiber from your foods to move the probiotic down the gut too quickly. So taking your most potent probiotic at bed is going to be the best. If we have someone on a gut restoration protocol, they might be taking probiotics a couple times during the day, and that's fine too. But if you're taking one, it should be taken at bed. Now, the second piece of this, if you're not reacting to it well, if you're having bloating or distension or looser stools or constipation, changes in the bowel, changes in bloating, give yourself about 5 days to see if you acclimate. If you don't, you likely have dysbiosis. So, you know, there's 3 to 5 pounds of bacteria in your gut. And if you throw in some good army players and you have a bad army set up, you're going to get a bacterial battle. And so sometimes we have to kind of plow the fields or weed before we can reseed and fertilize. So I would say, you know, at that point, I would recommend likely doing a stool test if you don't respond well to the probiotics, because that is a really good indication of dysbiosis or overgrowth of bad bacteria.
Okay, perfect. Question 3 is from Bonnie from Austin. High cholesterol runs in my family. Do I need to limit the number of eggs I eat? Oh, this one's so good.
Bonnie from Austin. No, you do not. cholesterol in the diet has not been linked in negative outcomes with the endogenous cholesterol that we make in our body. And we can make cholesterol in our body from cholesterol-free foods. So a vegan muffin, which has no milligrams of cholesterol, you know, doesn't use eggs in the muffin or anything like that, can raise our cholesterol in an unfavorable way due to the refined flours and those refined sugars, which are also found in all of your breakfast cereals. And usually when you remove eggs from your breakfast, the cereal comes in its place. So you can absolutely consume eggs. Eggs actually can increase your healthy, dense lipoproteins, those high-density lipoproteins, which we like to use as a broom for the vessel. The higher, the better with that HDL. And then the eggs also help to, of the LDL cholesterol molecules, make more of the large buoyant versus the small dense. So we are less prone to the oxidative damage and the inflammation and the plaque formation. The eggs also have specific nutrients like choline and B vitamins like folate, which help to support heart healthy function and reduce other inflammatory compounds like homocysteine. So eat your eggs. When I worked for a physician's practice before starting Naturally Nourished, I actually had people prescribed 16 eggs a week. And that was not a maximum, really. It was pretty much a minimum, 16 eggs a week. And within getting that many eggs per week, they were able to still reduce or completely get off of their statin drug therapies by having favorable cholesterol changes in their body. That wasn't the only change we made, but it was definitely one of them. And we saw only favorable outcomes. So keep eating your eggs.
And the yolks. Please eat the yolks.
Yes, the yolk is where it's at. That's where all those healthy fats are.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for sending that in, Bonnie. The next one is from Scott from Fort Lauderdale. What is something I can do for my reflux? Do I need to avoid acidic foods?
Oh, love this question, Scott. So a couple things is, are you dealing with active heartburn and, you know, how severely it influences you? And then do you have bloating or distension, or do you have issues with your bowels? Because if you have digestive issues beyond just heartburn or reflux, I would go to do a hydrochloric acid challenge. And this would be done with actually increasing the hydrochloric acid in your stomach to challenge that what we call hypochlorhydria, which is too low of stomach acidity. Often after being on a proton pump inhibitor like Nexium and the other medications in that family, they suppress your acid production, which over time leads to really negative things like lowering your B12, which can drive things like neuropathy and also anemia. It can lower your calcium, which can drive low bone density and bone loss and also acute anxiety. It can be this whole vicious cycle. So regulating your acidity in your stomach is key. So doing a hydrochloric acid challenge can be one way to improve your digestive system while weaning you off of the medication. And that can in turn correct your reflux, because when you get a balanced hydrochloric acid in the gastric pouch or in the stomach, that actually helps that esophageal sphincter, or that connection between the esophagus and the stomach, to close more effectively. And that can then in turn prevent the reflux. Secondary to this, if you don't have any digestive issues, let's say you don't experience any bloating, your bowels are totally normal, or you're more susceptible to acidic foods, you might try a route using melatonin. You can actually use melatonin, which we think of as the main agent to help with depth of sleep at night, about 3 grams at bed of melatonin for 30 days while you're still on your medication. And then you can go ahead and take your medication every other day as you wean. Melatonin is actually 70% produced in the gut, just like serotonin. And melatonin also helps to create a pH balance in the GI. It helps to buffer the intestines, so you're not getting any acidity passing through the stomach pouch, which is supposed to be very acidic. And it also helps to close that esophageal sphincter itself. So that's a much easier kind of turnkey solution. The hydrochloric acid challenge is really important if you struggle with other digestive concerns, but that does have to be done with a clinical conversation. So that would be something that could be done as a virtual client, and we could talk you through that process of that hydrochloric acid challenge. You can read more about that on our blog. We have a blog article on, I think if you search, what is it, purple pill or something like that, or reflux, it'll definitely come up. But both of those are things to consider. And you could start the melatonin as an easier approach, 3 grams a day for at least 3 months. The first month staying on your medication, the second month for the first 2 weeks going every other day, and then you could completely hold the medication and see if that resolves. Aside from that, you don't have to stop acidic foods, with the exception of having Barrett's esophagitis or esophageal ulcers. If you do have actual or ulcers in the gastric pouch, if you do have acidity that's driving tissue destruction in your esophagus or your stomach, then I'm going to want to cool and soothe before I would do the hydrochloric acid challenge most definitely. You could still go forward with the melatonin, but I would want to cool and soothe that whole area of the tissue before we would stop your antacid because we don't want to do any further harm. So we would use things like glutamine. Our GI lining support would be a great product for that. It has glutamine, aloe vera, and DGL. DGL is shown in research to repair ulcers. So I would definitely start that first month with the melatonin, and then you could work on the medication wean. And once you lay down the GI lining support, that should help you with acidic foods like tomatoes and citrus. Coffee is another one that's talked about with reflux. And then you just have to listen to your body. There will be, of course, some foods that are going to influence you differently than others. Chocolate's another one that's typically on that list. But if you can correct the function of the body, you should be able to eat those foods that have a wider gamut of health supporting compounds versus just strict avoidance.
I love the melatonin input. That's, you know, something new that I learned recently. And I just don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
Definitely, Scott, check out episode number 4, to conventional versus functional medicine approaches for disease treatment. Allie talks about a lot about GERD reflux and other interventions you can do. Like, again, the apple cider vinegar is a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next question is Lucy from Michigan. I keep getting yeast infections. How can I prevent these?
Okay, Lucy. So this is a really common incident that can often happen with imbalance of gut bacteria. So the first line of defense would be taking a good quality probiotic. I would definitely recommend the Restore Baseline probiotic that we carry. It's a 50-50 blend of lacto and bifidobacteria, which are the two main well-researched probacteria in the gut. Another one you could work with is the Ultraflora Women's, which is on our link through from our Metagenic site. This is specific to the rhamnosus culture that is found to positively influence the vaginal area, the vault. We learned that, I've never heard this acronym, so I think it's so cute. I've heard of GALT and other things that stands for, GALT is gut-associated lymphatic tissue, but vault is vaginal-associated lymphatic tissue.
Perfect.
So it's basically the immune cells in the vaginal area. Anyway, so the Ultraflora Women's probiotic is specific to that. So you could work with that as well. Again, you could take both of them at bed and definitely following up after treatment with those. Now, if they keep returning, I would recommend doing a candida cleanse first and foremost. And that will be available soon as an ebook. So stay tuned. You could also book a consult to talk about how to go about a candida cleanse. But that's something that would be a strong evidence. Candida mostly lives in the gut, the GI tract, and also in the vaginal tissue and genitalia in general. So doing a 6 to 8 week candida cleanse would be a efficacious way of really truly eradicating or killing off that bacteria and or yeast. And the issue is often we'll have people with candida that it flips back and forth from BV, bacterial vaginitis, into yeast infections. And those strains just kind of flip back and forth. And it can be a total frustrating cascade where you're back and forth from an antibiotic to Diflucan and so forth. So definitely don't try to prevent yourself from going through more than 2 rounds or at all of antibiotics if you can. It's going to help your whole gut microbiome. Something else to consider is if you've done a candida cleanse and it's still coming back, figuring out if your partner, if you are sexually active, if your partner may also have candidiasis. Candida can be transmitted sexually, even just with tissue transference. It's not that it has to be transferred in sperm. And so if your partner has candida, regardless of cleansing and doing all these things, you're going to have this rebounding influence of that yeast that's going to perpetuate and grow and take over the playing field of your vault, essentially. And so that would be something else to consider, potentially doing a candida cleanse with your partner to kill 2 birds with 1 stone and really kind of get rid of it for good, and then staying on the good bacteria long haul. something I like to recommend as a treatment, as an alternative to something like Monistat or something that you can buy over the counter, is doing a yogurt suppository. So you want to make sure that it is a plain. You don't need to put strawberry yogurt up your vault. You want to get plain yogurt. And ideally, the yogurt should have no binders or fillers or stabilizers. I really like the Nancy's brand of yogurt for this. And take a tampon applicator and discard the tampon, the cotton from there. And then fill the applicator with the Nancy's organic yogurt. Pop it in the freezer for about 30 minutes to 60 minutes, just enough to harden it a little bit more than that liquidy yogurt. And then it's cold and delightful, but you're going to want to lay down in bed and insert that. You'd want to probably wear a panty liner or a pad at bed, because of course some of that yogurt's going to pass its way through your body. But that's a really great way to reset the pH and positive vaginal flora. You could also open up one of those, Ultra Women's probiotic capsules and mix that into the yogurt and put that into that tampon applicator. You can do that a couple times a week until it resolves, and then just for good maintenance about once a month. And that should keep your vault happy and healthy.
Take care of your vault, ladies.
Yes, yes. The other part about that I would just say is watch your pH of your cleansing products. I think that's often, the vaginal pH is very different than the rest of the skin. And so, don't use astringent soaps down there. That's going to actually remove your defense players to keeping all of that area sound. Really the good recommendation is warm water. And you could use like a castile soap or something like that, but you definitely don't want to use any of like the scented soaps and body washes and things like that down there.
Okay, I think that's going to help a lot of people out there. it's a very common question.
I know. I think I need to write a blog on that. Yeah, protecting your vault.
I agree. Okay, one last question, Mira from Houston. Why has food combining never been addressed on your site?
Oh, okay. Mira, food combining has not been addressed on my site, and also the Eat Right for Your Blood Type will not be assessed on my site because it's not something that I subscribe to or have seen evidence-based research on. I believe if what you're speaking to, and then I'll talk about how I use food combining, because that term could really be broad, but I believe if you're referring to food combining as far as like don't eat fruits after a meal because they create fermentation and, certain foods to be eaten at certain times and in combination, a lot of that's based on kind of the acid and alkaline balance and also based on concepts that are not sound with really having a intimate understanding of anatomy and physiology of the body. When we're talking about anything that's being digested, by the time it passes through the hydrochloric acid that's supposed to be in the stomach at a pH of 1 to 2, that's going to really denature most enzymes as is and really make a big change in the food particle structure. And then also there's digestive enzymes released across the entire brush border of your intestines. And so the food combining has really been more conceptual and not held up to date with research. So I don't talk about that. What I do talk about, though, is no naked carbs. That's going to be all over in our optimal eating, our balanced snacks, my optimal eating virtual class. And that concept, if you want to use the term food combining, is that when we have a carbohydrate-rich food, we don't want to eat it on its own. And this has nothing to do with the digestive elements. It has to do with the glycemic influence of the foods. And so carbohydrate foods on their own will create a much more high spike of our blood sugar, which then will create an insulin rebound, which will then create more fat storage and a blood sugar spike, which will lead to imbalance of blood sugar throughout the day. So having almond butter with your apple slices or nuts and seeds with your grapes or raw aged cheeses with your pieces of fruit or spreading a nut butter on a piece of Ezekiel sprouted toast or something like that, all of that is going to blunt the glycemic influence, the fat especially, and then the protein really just helps in optimal body composition. So eating in balance within your macros is more about metabolism and distribution of how those calories influence us metabolically and glycemically. And that we do talk about, I think, almost every time we talk.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not,
yeah, but food combining in the way that it's been coined back in the day has been debunked. And so that's not something that I practice or do.
Okay. Thank you, Mira. And thank you, everyone, so much for submitting your questions. Keep them coming. We're going to address as many as we can. I'm sure there's going to be more Q&As to follow as the questions pile up. If you want to submit your question to Allie to answer, please go to AllieMillerRD, as in registereddietitian.com/podcast. And at the bottom, there's a blue box with Allie tipping her head playfully.
Hello.
And an Ask Allie box. So submit your questions there and we will get them answered.
Please do. And continue to interact with us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Allie Miller RD. And if you haven't picked up your copy of the book yet, make sure you do. Filled with information, food as medicine content, and recipes to support your journey to health. Naturally nourished, food as medicine to optimal health. Get your copy today and stay in the conversation, and we'll catch up next time. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at AllieMillerRD.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Carly at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.